You're listening to JD and Tammy Rucker as we deliver the NOQ report, or as we like to call it, the NOQ report. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy.
You know, I really wish that we could say that critical race theory wasn't an issue, wasn't a thing. I wish we could say that most people don't know what it is here in America, because it is atrocious. But unfortunately, as we're going to be talking about today, it is a very well-known issue. It's growing in popularity. It's becoming pervasive across Western society, and it's being used as a tool to specifically take down Western society and especially conservative ideologies. Welcome to the NOQ Report. I wish I could say this was a happier one, because I am happy that I have my lovely, brilliant, talented, and totally a non-believer in critical race theory, my co-host and wife, Tammy, joining me today. Say hi, Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
Later on, we're going to also have Carlin Borisenko joining us, who she's going to be talking about the Coke story, Coke being woke, going broke, because they're a joke story that's happening as we speak. But
she actually broke the story.
She did break the story. She broke the story, and we're going to re-break it today, live, on the NOQ Report, unless you're listening to a recording, in which case it's not live. But that's okay. Let's start with just a few stories that point to, that kind of back up this premise. But before we get to that, I want to say something real quick about critical race theory. So we assume sometimes that everybody knows what it is, what it's doing, how it's working, and all that good stuff. But as a brief overview, critical race theory is essentially the idea that racism is inherent in people. It is specifically inherent in white people, that people of color, which does not include, for the sake of argument, according to their arguments, that does not include Asian Americans, who are now, for whatever reason, classified as white. You know, we're like the adoptive white people. For those who listen to the podcast, I am not Caucasian, but apparently I am now because of critical race theory.
I, on the other hand, am.
She's a white girl.
Very, very white.
She's so white, and it's awesome. So,
in other words, yeah. The disparities of one racial group, specifically Black Americans, is the fault of society.
Right.
White society,
and
specifically.
And here's the thing. It was at one point, okay?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, through slavery, through, you know, before the Civil Rights Movement, even shortly after the Civil Rights Movement, mm-hmm. even, I would say, into the 80s and 90s. But here's the thing, is that over the years, over the decades, racism has faded. And I'm not saying that there's fewer racists or that people are less racist. I'm saying that there's much far less systemic racism than there was. And that people do have legitimate opportunities. Now, is that to say that there's no, you know, that there's no drawbacks or challenges with being a person of color, that your challenges are different from our challenges as Asian Americans or Caucasians? No. I mean, right. Well, no. I mean, yes, your challenges are different. I said two different things.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely challenges.
There are challenges
with different groups of people, whether it's because of their color, whether it's because of their religion, or whatever the case is. There are challenges. Now, that isn't comparable to somebody's, you know, a Black person will say, well, you can't say what it's like to be Black, obviously, because you're not Black. So
true.
You really don't have any say in the matter. But, okay, fine. But let's, you know, take a look at statistics. So you would think that during the height of racism, in the aside from slavery, okay, let's say right before the Civil Rights Movement, let's say 1950s, you know, 1940s, early 20th century, you would think that with all the racism, inherent racism across this country, that
across the world, let's face it.
Yeah, for sure. That there would be, it would have a dramatic impact. It would be oppressive to the Black families and to Black people. Now, speaking of in terms of their income and stuff like that, yeah, of course that would be. But what about the family? What about the Black husband and wife and children and
the nuclear family?
The nuclear family. What about their belief system and all this other stuff, their values and so forth? is that affected by oppression?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I'm asking it to whoever's listening as well as you. So you would think that that would have an effect. Well, maybe, maybe not.
It does.
It does, right. Yeah, but negative or positive?
Well, I think that the effect of,
aside from oppression is negative generally. I mean, that's agreeable. But I'm talking about
opportunity.
Right.
When it comes to opportunity, there are reduced opportunities regardless of whether you're Black, white, Hispanic, Asian,
right.
Native American, whatever. Whatever your race is, if you grow up in a family that is underprivileged based upon financial economic challenges, or if you grow up in a family where the one or both parents are missing,
mm-hmm.
okay, out of the equation, or if you grow up in an abusive family, race doesn't come into the equation. It's you're already challenged regardless of race.
Right.
The challenge that I think you're referring to is that in many cases, what's not discussed, we might talk about, if you're white or you're Asian American, you're inherently racist. But the challenge that's not being discussed is the fact that there are fewer families when it comes, percentage wise in people of color, and mm-hmm. specifically in the Black community, there are fewer, husband and wife and children families.
Right.
As compared to other races.
Well, I think the critical race theory, I think it blames.
And that has nothing to do with racism, by the way. It's not right. like, oh my gosh, they can't be families because of racism. That's bogus.
Or they don't want a family because of their race. But
right.
But I think that critical race theory does something. It actually, like most, rubbish theories or whatever, it ignores some really important, it sort of distracts us from what the real facts are. And it misses something that's really important. The underlying, in most cases, it would be the underlying cause of the things that they're now complaining about. Okay, what brought on critical race theory? By the way, critical race theory was, it started around the 80s, but it got its name a little bit later. And this theory was, big proponents of the theory, almost the authors of the theory, were all African Americans. I don't like to say that, I say Black Americans, who were lawyers. Most of them were lawyers, but they were all very well educated and, and had this, I don't know why, but, and I think it was around the 80s or 90s that this really started to catch on in that community. I'm saying that community, but not the Black community. I'm talking about the academic, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, they started to see some pretty big, and that's actually when it started. So there was something to this. In the 80s, something happened. Okay. There was a really big impact on the Black communities. We saw an explosion of families, of single mother family or single parent families. It was just exponentially, it grew exponentially from 1950 as a starting point. Okay. There are a lot of statistics out there. If you even look at the Census Bureau, you'll see that in 1950, for example, and this is before really civil rights started to really take effect. Like they still weren't able to go to college, right? A lot of Black men and women wanted to go to college, but they couldn't. Okay. But in 1950, what is the percentage of Black families with two parents?
54.
78%.
78.
Guess how much it was in 1990?
54.
48%.
That's closer.
So something happened between 1950 and 1990. You're talking 78 to 48. Okay. That's a major, major drop in two parent families. Okay. Now we have to ask ourselves if in 1950, Black Americans were being oppressed, they weren't allowed to go to colleges. They weren't able to do the things they didn't have equal rights. But in 1990, let's say they had equal rights. Wouldn't you agree? 1990?
Yeah.
Okay. What happened between then and then that would cause such a disparity among Black American families?
Taking prayer out of schools?
Okay. Well, then you would probably see that same type of decline or, you know, decrease in married families with white families.
Okay.
You didn't see that.
Roe v. Wade?
Well, actually, that may have had something to do with it.
Hmm.
But
why don't you just tell us what it is?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying I don't know what the exact answer is.
Oh, okay.
So the critical, what I'm trying to say is that critical race theory, it seems to ignore some of the most, the fundamental reasons why Black Americans, and some of them, not all of them, feel like they are still, that the reasons for their poverty or the reasons for whatever is because of society, okay? When in fact, it's not society at all.
It's not a rights. It's not the
government.
Industrial racism. It's not any of these things.
It's not society, guys. It's the government. What ended up happening after the civil rights movement is government got involved, very much got involved, not only with the Black community, but
are you talking like affirmative action?
We're talking about taking Black Americans. And rather than just say, okay, civil rights is a good thing, equal rights for all, regardless of race, regardless of gender, that's great. Leave it at that. Now, allow those people to just do what everyone else could do instead of trying to cater to them. Try to say, well, guess what? You guys are not quite like white people. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to give you some incentive to not work and give you money for
free. Oh, welfare.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Like, you know, we're...
Don't roll your eyes at me.
No, I wasn't doing it at you. Okay. I know I'm not saying this properly. This subject to me is infuriating.
And I can tell.
There's a lot of... Really? Do I sound really mad?
Oh, no, but you're...
Okay. Well, there's so many things to say, and I have so many things to say about this.
Why don't we go to one of the stories?
It's the
first.
Most racist thing. I mean, the whole thing from 1950, I think it's more racist. Well, what happened to the Black community?
Keep going.
Around mid 1960s to let's say now has been the most racist thing. I mean, it has torn apart Black families. It has put them in this situation to where now they're fallen apart within society. And it's not society. It's not the people around them. It's not their neighbors, their white neighbors, their white coworkers or whoever.
So you're saying the government has exacerbated the challenges ever since the civil rights movement,
right?
Which that should have been essentially a reset. Okay, great. Let's take it from here. Let's heal. Let's, you know, try to erase. Now that we've eliminated racism legally, let's eliminate it in the hearts and minds of the people. But instead, what you're saying is that policies put forth by mostly by Democrats have actually expanded not just the challenges put forth to minority communities, but also expanded racism itself, particularly racism as it pertains to people of color versus Caucasians. And now we're fighting against Asian Americans. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Government in itself is the whole, I mean, I'm talking about Democrats mainly, politicians. I believe they're the most racist of,
that's a given.
It's makes me very upset because when you take people and you separate them out, first of all, I hate the term minority, okay? Because you're not a minority, you're an American. And so why are you called a minority?
Me that,
let's put you to the side and say, listen,
it's always bugged me that women are classified as minorities, but there's more of you than there are of us. Thank the Lord.
There's this issue that I take with telling a group of people based upon their race to say that they're less capable of achieving anything than a person of that's white. So instead, what we're going to do...
Or Asian American.
So the same statistics, the Census Bureau also shows that. Now, the income for Black families, that is two-parent households, rose the same, almost the same level as with whites. It was 12 to 15%, like 12% for Black families, 15% for whites. Okay, they were making about the same amount. And it rose really high from 1960 to 19... Okay, so for single mother households for Black families, it virtually didn't move. Okay, that should tell you something. So what does that suggest? And it's and for the children in single mother homes in Black families under 18, their high school graduation rate, that also drops. So what we're seeing is that all of those statistics that they're talking about now, it all was tied to the family, a single mother household. Not only was she making less, is she making less than what she was making in 1960 and 1970, but her children are doing worse than ever before. So it's, that's the main issue. And I know a lot of Black leaders have come out and talked about this. It's the family, it's family, it's family. Where are the dads? You know, I think even Denzel Washington was talking about this. He said it so much better than I could, but he was talking about this, you know, they were trying to pin him down, you know, what about this? And he's like, it's the dad, it's the family. And that really is the underlying cause, but critical race theory goes way past that. You know, it's like, it's not them, it's you. It's because you're white. It's society has, you know, sort of geared itself towards being just white and all white things. And if you're Black, then you don't, you get oppressed basically. And, you know, society is to blame, not us, not our communities, not anything else. And it's though both those things are not true. It's the government that has come in and tried to disable the growth within these communities purposely, I believe, purposely. You know, we're talking about 1963, Roe versus Wade. When we talk about all of the abortion, we know who started that. It was someone who didn't like the idea of more Black babies. Okay, so she was completely racist and wanted to set up these Planned Parenthoods, these abortion clinics within Black communities. Okay, that's actually where they started. So from that moving forward, that was not just an isolated incident. Okay, and that became part of the government. The government allowed for abortions. They legalized abortions. And they built these, they continue to build these Planned Parenthood in poor communities and Black communities. And the list goes on. The list goes on. You know why single mothers haven't, their income hasn't raised really high, even with the time?
Because the white man is keeping them down.
Because the government hands out welfare and they don't incentivize women. They said, you're going to lose your benefits if you make more than $32,000 a year, or if you make more than $27,000 a year. We don't want you to get your education. We don't want you to better yourself, because if you do, we are not going to give you any more food. We're not going to. They de-incentivize growth within the Black community just on welfare alone. And that isn't talking about all the other things that they've done, especially like in the 90s, even Biden was part of that. The prison, trying to put more Black men in prison for, I mean, guys, the entire government from the time of the civil rights movement until now is racist. It's not society. It's not your neighbor. It's the government. And I wish that Black communities would please just, I know some, many have, especially during the Trump thing. All right. During the election, there are a lot of Black Americans who supported Trump, and many of them, and I think Candace Owens is a really good example of someone who really puts this well. Am I speaking too much?
About Candace Owens?
No, about all of this. She talks about this really well. She talks about how, you know, Black Americans continue to support the people that basically want to keep them down. And that's Democrats. And they will continue with these policies. They will try to turn Black people against white people. And then they will try to make everybody be racist just in the fact that Black Americans now have turned against their neighbors, their white neighbors, because they've been told that, first of all, if you're white, you're immediately guilty, and that everyone is inherently racist, and that it's your fault, and you should be sorry for being white. And anyway, it's infuriating to me. And I think that I'm hoping that Black Americans wake up to the fact that it has been mostly led by Democrats. The government has been the one, and this critical race theory completely ignores all of that.
Well, it doesn't ignore it. It actually opposes it. You know, the notion of critical race theory. This is what you're describing is not discussed in woke circles, because what you're describing disproves critical race theory in general. Critical race theory as a concept is designed to, as you said, place blame where blame should not be held. And this is why people like Robin DiAngelo writing books, you know, about white fragility and doing these seminars and posting on LinkedIn and getting all this attention. She's charging hundreds of dollars per phone call, okay, and tens of thousands of dollars for these seminars that she's doing. She's cashing in for sure. Mm-hmm. But question is, you know, does she really believe it? And I'm going to ask Carolyn Borisenko that question here in a bit. But first, I want to get to a few stories. I want to get to examples of how, now that we've demonstrated the critical race theory is false, let's look at how it's being used, how it's being weaponized. We shouldn't even just say it's being used as a tool. It is being full-blown weaponized today, and they're really pushing it hard. So St. John's University now offers a critical race theory minor. So you can actually minor in critical race theory in New York City, of all places. Of course you can. According to this, St. John's University in New York City has announced it will offer a 15-credit, quote, critical race and ethnic studies interdisciplinary, quote, end quote, minor. The interdisciplinary minor is described as a method for students to study and research major critical race theory subjects like, quote, social inequalities, international migration, economic globalization, healthcare systems, legal and carceral structures. What's carceral? Carceral?
Is that structures.
Okay. Colonialism and empire. I need to probably take this course just so I can find out what carceral
15
is.
15 credits, wow.
15. I think that probably has to do with like maybe incarceration or something. I don't know. Point being is that you listen to all this up. Economic globalization, healthcare systems. These are all things, the concept of colonialism and the empire of the United States. All these things, even in the description of this minor, push towards this idea of that we've always pushed against these radical progressive ideas, such as globalization, such as, you know, viewing the United States as colonial masters. Things are not, you know, is there bad in our history? Absolutely. Well, are we inherently bad today as a nation? Some would say there are bad things that we do, but generally speaking, we do try now. Our efforts are being put towards positive things. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to continue with this because this is the required courses are this. Are thus: Introduction to Critical Race and Ethnic Studies, Methodologies in Critical Race and Ethnic Studies, Anti-Blackness Around the Globe, Comparative Racializations, Blackness, Indigeneity, Asianness.
Yes, I'm included.
And
Latinidad,
and Capstone Seminar in Critical Race and Ethnic Studies.
My gosh,
Latinidad.
It's been just too. It's been so long since Latinidad. We've been to college. We need to get a refresher course. Maybe we should get a refresher course at St. John's. Mm. No, okay. So obviously they're pushing it here. Here's a funny one. This one comes from the Arizona Department. I shouldn't say funny because it's really sad. According to this, 3-month-old babies are racist, says Arizona Department of Education's Equity Toolkit. You know, I'm not even going to read this one. You guys get the idea. This is terrible.
Right.
Read it.
The Arizona Department of Education has crafted an equity toolkit designed to teach critical race theory to children, offering a number of recommended readings on the topic. And The toolkit teaches, among other things, babies start to become racist at just 3 months of age. The toolkit insists that babies must be spoken to about race as letting children draw their own conclusions based on what they see leads to racism. It is unclear how allowing children to think for themselves leads to racism.
But I thought that children are able to vote at a young age and they can decide if they're transgender or not, but they can't. If they're allowed to go unchecked, they're saying that they're going to become racists.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Well, it suggests that white children specifically are strongly biased in favor of their own race by the time they are 5 years old, but claimed that such a phenomenon does not exist among Black and Latinx children.
Don't say that phrase. Don't use that word. That's not Latinos do not use the word Latinx or Latinx or whatever they would just.
Well, that's what they said.
I know. Well, I know. It's a quote. I know. That's what they say.
But to solve this problem, the toolkit advises parents to begin speaking to their children about race even before their children can speak.
Look, we've got. So, yeah. Okay. Sorry. I'm not trying to rush along, but we've heard these ideas. Okay. We know what's happening to Dr. Seuss. No, we're not going to be talking about Dr. Seuss. Okay. Because that's. Like, that's a
hey
totally
kids,
different
let's
thing.
Let's point out race, shall we?
They don't understand that they think they're trying to end racism by being racist. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And the fact that they're able to overcome their cognitive dissonance on this, to be able to possess this concept, this idea in their head, and not see a contradiction with reality, it's mind-blowing. And this is, I've seen more examples of a strong delusion, as mentioned multiple times in the Bible. This, to me, has to be that. Okay, I cannot believe that people are this dumb. But here's the problem. This is bigger than just, oh my gosh, you know, those guys are woke, these guys are woke, Coke is woke, everybody's woke. It's actually starting to have some real world effects. And I found this one. This is from the American Bar Association. It's a lesson on critical race theory. Now, this is a long, of course, lawyers wrote it, so you can get the idea. This is a long dissertation on critical race theory, but specifically, this is a playbook on how civil rights attorneys can weaponize critical race theory in order to get their way, to be able to push it, not just out through society in the private world, not just as Tammy was saying, going through, you know, through government to push racist concepts and racist ideas, and make them happening everywhere. They're also talking about in the legal system being able to weaponize critical race theory for the purpose of spreading it, of enabling cultural Marxism to take over the court system itself, making it to where, you know, the strategies on how to intimidate judges. Okay, nobody likes to be called a racist. Nobody likes to be called a bigot. Okay, especially if they're not. And the vast majority of people, I don't think they are. Now, are there stereotyping? You know, do people stereotype other races? Absolutely.
We all do.
Everybody does. You know, it's hard
not
to.
It's actually kind of funny.
It is.
In some cases, not all cases.
Yeah, no, in most cases, it is.
We all
when
stereotype
she says funny,
each
it's,
other, yeah.
It's usually, it's mild-mannered. It's not something that, like, can actually do harm, especially if we're not voicing it. In today's world, so few people are voicing their, you know, you can't tell a joke about whatever, you know, Asians. I think that
stereotyping to me is one of the things that, I mean, that's a cultural difference that I think it spans across, and it's not broad for white people. For instance, I mean,
you just call me a broad?
White.
That's sexist.
Because white people, they say you're white. Well, what does that mean? I mean, that's the color of my skin. Yeah. But do you have any different types of white people there are? There's stereotypes for Irish people. There's stereotypes for, you know what I mean? Because there's stereotypes for each culture. And I like it. I love not stereotypes, but just that every culture has their little things. You know what I mean? And it's what makes everybody.
Diversity is not homogenization. You know, it's funny that's
I know, it's
kind
not
of what
like
they
if
want.
Everybody's
like, you can't
supposed
say anything,
to be the same.
You can't say anything about anybody except for white people, especially white males, especially white straight males. Okay, those are the only people they can be attacked thoroughly. And this is where, so there's three reasons real quick. We've got to wrap this up because we're about to interview Carlin Borisenko. But there are three reasons. We're finally going to get the actual really point of the podcast.
I'm like rambling all it's okay. through this
we'll,
podcast.
We'll, you'll get a nap later today. what was I saying? I'm really tired, so I don't remember what I was saying. So there's three reasons that critical race theory is hurting society. Number one, this is the most obvious one, and it's the one that it just shocks me that few people on the left, very few, and even a handful of people on the right don't recognize that it's a really, really bad thing when decisions are made, especially personnel decisions are made specifically based on race, sex, sexual preference, whatever. It should be always, and this is how you achieve greatness as a nation, is that you vote for people based upon their qualifications. You hire people based upon their qualifications. You educate people based upon their aptitude and their willingness to work and their intelligence. It should have nothing. Does that mean that there should not be any of these programs out there that do work with race? I do believe that there needs to be some programs that can help particular races. I have nothing against those types of programs, but I'm not talking about quotas, you know, mandates.
Right, exactly.
Saying you have to have this many. You know, and it works in both directions. Just like with the Harvard and Yale, you know, they basically said, look, if we're going to bring in more Asian Americans, then their test scores have to be even higher. Otherwise, you know, because most of the top test scores for SATs and stuff like that are coming from Asian Americans. So we've got to set their bar even higher than Caucasians.
If you just see that discrepancy, let's say you go to whatever and you don't see any other person, you know, that's different color or different background, whatever, you know, I think that, okay, those communities, they need to take, and you see that widespread across the nation, not just in one place, that community itself needs to take a look and see where are we lacking and then reach out to see how you can help. And then if there's, get the government way out of the way. Keep the government out of those communities.
Right.
They don't need to be, it doesn't need to be there because this is where we're at now. This is what we're facing. This is going to be reverse race. Everything's going to be, it's going to be more racist than it ever has been. Okay. Because they're forcing this upon us and they're completely missing the point. There are the real problems here and it's not going to help Black people. How is it going to help the Black communities by making white people feel guilty for being white? Tell me how that's going to help your community if you're a Black American. Please make that point because you can't. There's no logical way to say because of this, it's going to improve us. No, that is not the case. It's the communities themselves that need to get it together. Get the government out. Okay. And that means welfare. That means all. Don't allow the government to come in and be daddy. Okay. And that's what they've allowed this to do. And even in many white communities, this has happened where there's been a deterioration of families. It's just a single moms or, you know, they're just living on whatever. And it's just ridiculous. The government, it's not just the Black communities that have suffered because of the government coming in and being daddy. It's also other communities. So I'm telling you that it's the communities that have to step up here. It's not the government. It is not forcing this down our throats because this will have the reverse effect, in my opinion.
Absolutely. The second reason that this is going to destroy it is because this, you know, this whole concept is geared around trying to fight racism. But as we mentioned before, this actually promotes racism. People say it's anti-racism or opposite racism or whatever, you know, but whether it's Black or Hispanic or Asian or whatever, racism against white people is still racism, regardless. It is still racism. And number three is that it turns us, it turns people into, it helps them to embrace a victim mentality. When you have the mentality of a victim, you're no longer able to really, I mean, you start blaming everybody else. You don't pick yourself up. It's an un-American thing. We've got to get to Carla Borsenko. So okay. That's coming up next. You guys stay tuned.
Sorry. Can you smell it? It's your favorite freshly ground coffee brewing in your favorite cup. If you're anything like me or my family, coffee is essential for our mornings. And even more essential is good quality coffee. Well, Freedom First Coffee is our preferred choice. Made from organically grown beans from Mexico and Peru, they are then roasted here in the USA. So head on over to freedomfirstcoffee.com and choose our founder's blend in medium or dark roast, ground or whole bean. That's freedomfirstcoffee.com. And make sure you use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, for 10% off your order. And if you really want to be a freedom lover, choose a monthly subscription so you will never be without your Morning Joe. Again, that's freedomfirstcoffee.com.
Our next guest is an organizational psychologist working with individuals and organizations worldwide through her applied psychology practice, Zen Workplace, to help clients attain positive work experience through organizational and positive psychology with mindfulness techniques. We are blessed, pleased, and very honored to have Carlin Borisenko joining us today on the Knock Report. Carlin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm very glad to have you. Actually, we covered this story on Knock Report a few days ago. I don't know if you'd seen that. And you had broke this story about Coca-Cola. And it was, I mean, I was so shocked. And you'd think that in today's day and age of wokeness that nothing would shock us anymore. But I was so shocked to see Coca-Cola, LinkedIn, and their Be Less White campaign. Why don't you give us a little background and tell us how all this came about?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, I'm an organizational psychologist, and creating positive and fulfilling work experiences is something that I care deeply about. I also happen to complain a lot on YouTube about the state of politics and culture in our country. And, you know, I usually try to draw it back to the workplace and, you know, give people lessons that they can learn. So because I'm complaining about this stuff so publicly, what happens is people send me crazy things that their workplace is having them do for training, especially when it comes to the anti-racist training that has become so popular in my industry since the death of George Floyd. Now, I gotta be honest, I had encountered some of these trainings before George Floyd's death, but after George Floyd's death, it simply took over the entire corporate training industry. It was almost impossible to sell training that was not this anti-racist training. And so people send me examples of this, and I've been talking about it online for a while. And I have to tell you, I was actually really surprised that the Coke story got as much traction as it did, simply because I was not at all surprised to see this slide. I mean, the reality is that this content comes directly out of Robin DiAngelo's book, White Fragility. And that book has been around for a while. Organizations have been giving out copies to their employees. There have been whole book clubs about this. So just to back up a little bit, what happened is a staff member at Coca-Cola came in one day, and he and his team found out that they were assigned to do this anti-racist online training. Now, I guess all of them collectively were really uncomfortable with the content of this training, and he decided to send me a few screenshots, which I then posted on Twitter. Some of those screenshots included slides that said white people are oppressive and arrogant and don't listen and aren't humble and are only interested in white solidarity. Other slides said that white people are socialized to be racist from the time they're very, very young. And the big slide that got everyone's attention literally just said, try to be less white. Now, if that slide had said, try to be less Black, or try to be less Latino or Native American or Asian or whatever, you know exactly what would have happened. So it is unacceptable on any level to tell someone to be less of an immutable characteristic. I put these slides out on Twitter, and, you know, in my naivete, I really didn't think much was going to come of it, because, again, I had been screaming about this for months, but it ended up going massively viral, got a lot of attention, and currently has about 26 million views the last time I checked.
Yeah, it is. It's something that you're right. We sometimes in the media field, we sometimes see these things that perhaps would have struck a chord. Maybe we would have thought that's just insane. You know, I'd love to say a few years ago, but really just 1 year ago, it would have been, wow, that's insane. But I think a lot of this is being normalized as part of, you know, this push towards what I consider to be a racist anti-racism in a way. I mean, obviously it's people call it, it's a, it's a against racism, and they say that this is kind of subversive racism or whatever. It's just racism, you know. If our goal, which it should be, is for us to be equal as people, regardless of, as you called it, the immutable characteristics, then being less of anything or more of anything from a racial perspective should be anathema. As an organizational psychologist, you're obviously able to, I guess you could say, exact change into companies. But you've seen this Robin DiAngelo come up, and we've covered her very thoroughly. We actually have, one of our writers did a chapter by chapter critique of her book, White Fragility. Have you read her book by chance?
I have read the book, and I will say that I descended into madness in the reading of that book. So I have great sympathy for your writer that was working on that.
I never could have done it myself. Ray Fava, shout out to you, brother. just reading he did a critique of the introduction. I'm like, there's no way I could ever read this book. But she's become extremely popular, okay? And to the point of, she's essentially printing money. Just to get on a phone call with her is hundreds of dollars. And then thousands of dollars to have her speak. Is this, and I'm going to ask you kind of a tough question here, but from your perspective, is this a con, or are these true believers in the whole idea of systemic racism and social justice and all this other stuff?
Well, I think it's both. I think it's absolutely both. I believe that Robin DiAngelo absolutely believes everything that she's saying 100%, but that doesn't mean it's not a con. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you look at the chapters in White Fragility, what you need to really do is look at the references that she's using, because the first half of the book, I think the first half of the book came from her dissertation, and there are some references, but there aren't even as many references as we would see in an average dissertation, to be honest. The second half of the book, there are so few references in that book, which basically means that she doesn't have academic standing or academic backup for the points that she's making. And there are entire chapters in that book with zero academic references from peer reviewed journals. So the fact that this training has gotten so popular, it's not because there is any evidence that it works at all. In fact, I have scoured peer reviewed journals for evidence that this training is effective, because frankly, if this workplace training is effective at creating more productive workplaces, at building better teams, at creating more inclusive environments, I want to know about it, right? I'm in favor of all of those things, but there is not one shred of evidence out there to say that this type of training is effective. And in fact, the only evidence I've been able to find says that organizations are actually better off doing nothing with their team members in terms of productivity, collaboration, inclusivity, all those things. They're better off doing nothing than doing training based on white fragility. So why are so many organizations doing it? Well, because it's a nice little virtue signal out to their staff to say, look, we're doing something.
We're doing something. We're on with Carlin Borsenko discussing, I guess you could say, systemic racism, but really this is about systemic lunacy that we're talking about here. I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball. You've been participating in stuff from a psychological perspective, from a workplace perspective, for your entire career. Looking into your crystal ball, I mean, what we're seeing today, is this a fad because of the George Floyd thing, because of all these other things? Or is this something that's going to continue, that's going to persist for years or even decades?
Well, the reality is this is not new in the workplace. It's been around for about a little over 10 years is when it really started showing up. It's just gotten really popular in the last year. So, I would say it's probably a little bit of both. I do think the hysteria around this training, where every organization feels like they need to do something, is probably going to die down at some point. Now, we're not there yet. But also the reality is that this is even more insidious, because this type of work is also being integrated into the school system. And I'm talking school system, not just higher education colleges, but in schools for children starting as young as 5, they're starting to change their curriculums to infuse this anti-racist nonsense. And actually, like the 1619 Project, which is a downright lie. The 1619 Project has been proven false on several different scenarios, but schools are writing entire curriculums around these things. So it gets a little bit trickier when we're talking about people being indoctrinated into this ideology throughout their entire education educational experience and then getting out into the workplace and that and expecting to see the same thing continue. And what happens in organizations a lot of time is that this training is actually demanded from their staff in order to prove that they're anti-racist. Now, there have been a couple examples of organizations that have pushed back on this ideology. The first organization is Red Bull, where the CEO just blatantly fired the people in North America that were trying to infuse this training, and I thought that was a perfect step. Another organization I really like is Coinbase. Coinbase's CEO sent out a memo to the entire staff saying, "We are a cryptocurrency company, and that is what we will be doing. We are not doing anti-racist work in a cryptocurrency company. And if you don't like that, here's a severance package. You can leave." And I actually thought that that was really brilliant, because what ended up happening is only about 5% of their staff took that severance package to leave, which shows you that people aren't really willing to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to standing behind these things. And I think we can also assess that some of those 5% were probably looking for a reason to leave anyway. So you might as well get paid on the way out the door. If more organizations stood up to this nonsense and stood up to their employees that were trying to get them to spend exorbitant amounts of money bringing these trainers in, the workplace would be much better off.
Yeah, it's like, why would we allow ourselves to be indoctrinated into an ideology that makes no sense? And I think perhaps worse than any of that is the fact that we're not just talking about an ideology that's wrong, okay? It's racist. And that makes it wrong. I'm saying their ideology, but we're talking about an ideology that is not just pervasive, but it's also destructive. It does drive people to do, in my opinion, very bad things. I am, for those who've listening to the podcast who don't watch the video, I am not white. I am an Asian American, but apparently, allegedly, I am now white because I'm an Asian American. I'm not a person of color. I'm not a minority. I've never experienced racism. I didn't, experience poorness. I'm a white guy now, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I've actually said to people that I think that Asians must be the most confused race of all, because sometimes you guys are considered oppressed and sometimes you guys are considered having assimilated to whiteness. There's an interesting passage in White Fragility where Robin DiAngelo is doing this her crazy training in an organization, and an Italian man comes up to her and says, "Well, what about the Italians? We were discriminated against." And her answer to him was, "You've assimilated to whiteness. Congratulations, you are white." And the same thing has happened with Asians lately, except when it comes to President Trump talking about the China virus. Then all of a sudden you're oppressed and discriminated against. But for all intents and purposes, in this ideology, Asians are considered white. And we can even look at places like, look at places like Harvard and Yale that actively discriminate against Asians in their admissions processes, because you guys tend to break the stereotype of what they consider, minorities to be, in terms of you do really well in school, you get really good grades. And so they've actually had to hold Asians to higher admission standards at these places, which is blatantly racist and discriminatory.
It is. We're on with Carlin Borsenko talking about, we're really talking about how to fix the world, because I've always been a big fan of the notion that we don't need, to fix things based upon race at all. There may have been a time, and I'll be very clear, I think there may have been a time in the past, in the not too distant past. It's funny, I just got a alert from my Coinbase after you mentioned the company. Now they're popping up, they heard me. Sorry about that. There may have been a time in the recent past, I'm talking about, within the last 20, 30, 40 years, where there was a need for affirmative action in certain areas, or there was a need to examine race and use that as a determining factor for this, that, or the other. I think that we have been homogenized as a nation, very much mm-hmm. to the point that we should be able to, in 2021, just say, look, race is completely irrelevant. You do what you do. Let's just all treat each other as humans, as Americans. And there are no standards that have to be placed specifically for. And I'm not talking about erasing culture. Okay. I'm talking about from a government perspective. Okay. To be clear. Now, with that said, do you see us, what we're seeing here with this white fragility stuff, with everything, are we going backwards? Are we, are we reversing some of the gains that we've made over the last 10, 15, 20 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to just disagree with you just slightly. I think that there are still conversations that we should have about race in this country. I do. I just don't think, you know, the conversation needs to be, we need to treat, you know, Black and brown people differently purely because of the color of their skin. I think there are conversations we could have about the fact that Black Americans are much more likely to live below the poverty line than white Americans, and what we can do to provide more opportunities in those areas. And frankly, President Trump had a great plan that he would have enacted in his second term if he was in office for specifically those things. So I don't think race is irrelevant in the conversation. I just think that the anti-racist movement, in terms of what Robin DiAngelo is doing, in terms of what Ibram X. Kendi is doing with how to be an anti-racist, that's not going to create less racism in this country. It's not going to create more opportunities for Black and brown people. It's not going to do any of the things that they claim it does. You know, in organizations, what it actually does, so there's a concept called psychological safety in the workplace, which is essentially, it's the idea of trust. Do you trust your teammates? Do your teammates have your back? Do you support each other? Do you collaborate well? Things like that. Psychological safety is actually the number one factor that leads to successful teamwork and outcomes in organizations. What anti-racist training does is it pits employees against each other. It sets them up to constantly be calling each other out on their inherent racism. And when you're doing that, when everything is racist, when an act like forgetting to CC someone on an email is considered racist, forgetting to invite someone to a meeting, when that is considered an act of racism, that's when we start to have a problem. And so we can't take these ideas and actually expect them to contribute to a more equal society or a more diverse society. All it does is create interpersonal conflict ad nauseum. And frankly, it teaches people with white skin, just like me, to hate themselves for who they are and how they were born.
Well, it's because as a white person, you're racist inherently, apparently.
Inherently. Yeah. And Robin DiAngelo actually says that in her book. She says, I have been racist since the womb. She talks about how she's been a racist her entire life. She talks about how even now she does racist things to her colleagues. And thank God she has colleagues that forgive her for her racism. I mean, white fragility is essentially the 150-page confession of an extremely racist person that is trying to convince everyone else that they're racist to be able to validate her experience in the world.
That is what you just said. I'm going to quote that in the article, because that's the most perfect assessment of the book and Robin DiAngelo that I think I've ever heard. So is there a solution? Okay, so let's say you're a business owner, right? Or let's say you're talking to a business owner. Let's say I'm a business owner, and you know, I'm like, well, man, you know, I respect what Coinbase and other companies have done. I don't like what Coca-Cola has done, but I do want to, I don't want to be canceled. I'm scared of the mob. I'm scared of this, that, or the other. I don't want my employees to be this. I can't afford severance packages for 5% of my employees. You know, what can I do?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, on the severance package piece, I'm going to suggest that any organization can actually afford severance packages for 5% of their employees, because those employees that are leaving are actually going to cost you significantly more than that in the long run if you keep them around. It's going to cost you in terms of productivity. It's going to cost you in terms of team cohesion. It's going to cost you in terms of outcomes. So that is actually a really fair investment for a lot of places to make, knowing the long-term view. But I also want to point out that there are diversity trainings that you can do that have nothing to do with anti-racism or critical race theory. I mean, my husband actually works for a very large Fortune 500 company that I'm not going to name because I'd like him to keep his job for the moment at least. And it was funny because we're both working out of the house right now. And I knew the minute he had to do his diversity training, I was watching out for it. I knew it was coming. And I saw him concentrating very hard at his computer one day. And I was like, aha, it's finally happening. And so I grilled him later about it. And he said, you know what? Like, it was fine. It was just about learning about different life experiences and looking at things from different perspectives. They didn't try to convince us that we're racist. And I thought that was actually pretty great. It was just like, you know, there's nothing wrong with learning about different life experiences, right? And so so the other thing I want to point out is that hang on, I'm really sorry, my microphone just disconnected. Everything just disconnected.
It's okay.
I can't even hear you now. Hang on.
No problem. I'm going to keep talking and pretending like keeping the conversation going. You know, I've never, are you back?
I'm back. I'm so sorry about that.
I don't know. I was trying to do my juggling. I was going to start telling a joke just in case it was an extended outage. All right, you're back. Continue.
I'm back. So, I mean, the other thing too, though, is like the type of training that I always did that I found worked really well in organizations was just about communication style training. And, you know, it's just about learning about how different people communicate, how different people work, trying to facilitate, learning about when people communicate differently than you and understanding why that happens. Now, when we're looking at different work styles, different communication styles, guess what? There is absolutely zero correlation between someone's work style and someone's race or someone's work style and someone's gender. And oftentimes a lot of the conflict that I see in organizations that are deemed as racist, it's mostly a matter of two people having different communication styles and going like this. But if you can explain to them, here's how you need to communicate to work effectively with this person, that actually fixes a lot of the problems that come up that are today being attributed to racism.
Very good. I've got one final question, but before we get to that, you know, can number one, are you doing this stuff for companies? Can companies call you and hire you to help them navigate this critical race theory waters that are out there today?
No, they absolutely can. I mean, the reality is that it's a little bit difficult because I'm so outspoken on these issues. I tend to get canceled a lot by companies. But if there were companies that were interested in this, you know, they absolutely can reach out to me through my website, zenworkplace.com, and we could talk about how to do it for them. I am pretty selective about the engagements that I take on right now simply because of cancel culture, but I'm always open to having conversations and at least trying to guide people in the right direction.
Very good. So let's go ahead and make a recommendation to all of the executives at Coca-Cola watching or listening today. Go to Zen Workplace. You still have an opportunity to not make us go dig out our RC Colas from the past.
Somehow I suspect I won't be hearing from Coca-Cola anytime soon, but that's all right. The thing is, though, that after the big splash around their training, LinkedIn actually pulled the training off of their website. So that training is no longer available for companies to take part in on their website, which I think is a really good first step. But Coca-Cola has not changed their diversity training program. In fact, Coca-Cola denied that this program was ever a part of their diversity. First, they issued a statement admitting that it was, but it said it wasn't the central focus of the training. And then they issued a second statement denying it. They're still doing their training program exactly as they were before, even with all the outrage.
What can we, and this is the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. What can we, as you know, obviously you're out there, you're talking to these various companies. What can we do as, and we already covered, what employers should be able to do. But now that we are in this cancel culture, we are in this world where systemic racism is considered to be the driving force for decisions being made all around us, not just in government, not just in business, not just in education, but in pretty much anything. You know, now that we're in this, I guess you could say, cowardly new world where everything has to be based upon one single assumption, what can we as just average Americans do to make it through until hopefully things get more normal in the future?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that you can do. Number one, you can try to petition your state legislatures to pass laws banning this type of training in state agencies and in state contractors. In fact, in New Hampshire right now, we're working on just that. I'm working with some legislatures in the New Hampshire House to try to get a law passed that would ban this type of training, at least as it comes to being funded by taxpayer money, which mirrors what Donald Trump did with his executive orders when he was still in office that were rescinded by Joe Biden on day one. But there are many states right now that are trying to get this banned at the state level. West Virginia is doing it. I believe Kansas is thinking about it. I just heard that Iowa is. I know that Texas and Florida are considering it and should really move forward with it. So that's something that people can do. Write your legislators. Make sure they know about this stuff. Just because you know about it doesn't mean they know about it. So really, you know, make sure you're pushing them on this, because if they're not hearing from you, they're not going to act on it. Other things you can do are, frankly, just, you know, speak up when you see this training happening. You know, one of the things, and I know that it's scary because sometimes people think that if they speak up, they're going to lose their job. But the reality of it is this: if everyone that was against this type of training just spoke up right now, this training would be gone in an instant. because it is not the majority that is in favor of this training. It is a small minority. I think it's maybe on the larger side, maybe 10% of the population. So most people are not in favor of this stuff, and everyone is keeping quiet out of fear. I look at someone like Jody Shaw of Smith College, who just resigned her position and now has filed a lawsuit against Smith College for exactly this type of behavior. We need more Jody Shaws in the world, people who are willing to speak up, people who are willing to put it on the line. And guess what? When Jody Shaw spoke up, people had her back and supported her. She had a very successful GoFundMe to make sure that she had the resources to be able to leave the college and be on a strong financial footing and still be able to push back against this. So, and if you're not going to do that, then just at least talk to your friends about it. Tell them why you don't think that these ideas work. You can have these private one-on-one conversations and at least try to influence people in that way.
That is wonderful. We've been very pleased to have Carlin Borisenko joining us today. I was going to say to Zay because of Zen Workplace. Yeah. You can find her at zenworkplace.com. It's a very Zen day, not very woke, but at least it makes a lot of sense. Carlin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Lord willing, we will be back very soon with another episode. But in the meantime, you guys stay strong, stay safe, and God bless.